Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
A 46-year-old woman has died in Moscow following a wave of Ukrainian drone strikes in several Russian regions overnight, which also forced the temporary closure of four airports across Moscow. The main theatre of war, though, remains Ukraine itself, where Russia is threatening to take a key strategic hub and has stepped up attacks on Ukraine's electricity grid. Ukrainian troops continue to hold significant territory in Russia's Kursk region. Well, for the very latest on all of this, we're joined by the BBC's Ukraine correspondent, James Waterhouse. James, thanks for being with us this morning. President Zelensky has clearly decided that he needs to bring this war home to Russia and to Russian people. Will those attacks overnight be hailed as a victory? And is that what is happening in Ukraine this morning?
I think we're seeing an extension of Ukraine's own sort of counterpunch strategy. It has been a number of months, I make, since Kyiv has launched drone attacks like this. These are drones that are manufactured in Ukraine that are launched on occasions several hundred kilometers inside Russia itself. Their targets are typically military, but every now and then you see what we are seeing in Moscow, where you are seeing reports of high-rise buildings being damaged, not extensively, not to the extent you see in Ukraine, but when you have the officials acknowledging that four airports have been forcibly shut, where you have officials on bordering regions with Ukraine, like Bryansk and Kursk, where drones were reportedly intercepted there. When you look at the numbers being quoted at around 144, this is something that Ukraine had clearly been building for. And as you allude to, this isn't going to suddenly, we're not going to suddenly see Ukrainian boots marching on Moscow, but it does sustain that psychological pressure. The only difference this time is that Ukrainian forces continue to control, to occupy territory in Russia's Kursk region.
And has Russia made a serious attempt to recapture that territory? What's the latest on that?
They're certainly digging defensive lines. There is a nuclear power station inside the Kursk region, which the Russians are desperate to keep control of. We have seen the UN nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, pay a visit there, urging fighting to stay away from that area. But crucially for Ukraine, it is keeping hold of it. I think the element of surprise has long gone. But I think the sort of longer view, the longer hope here of Ukraine's objective of softening Russia's advances elsewhere in Ukraine has yet to be realized. If anything, the opposite is happening. We are seeing a real hardening of Russia's approach of its war in Ukraine. It's claiming to have taken three more villages in the Donetsk region, and the front line is looking perilously fragile for Ukrainian troops. So when you see these drone attacks in Moscow, it's why you hear the Kremlin say, this is why we must continue with our invasion, because it continues to frame it as a defensive war.
So the Kremlin's view and strategy in the war has hardened, but what about the psychological impact on Russians? Because that was part of the aim, I'm sure you would agree as well, to bring this home to the ordinary Russian people so that they could no longer disregard that this war is happening on their doorstep. Has it had the desired effect from the Ukrainian point of view, would you say, James?
I think that is hard to measure. I think if we look in a broad stroke at the invasion, the full-scale invasion to date, Vladimir Putin has weathered a lot of storms, and he has only strengthened his position. When you look at the public dissent against the war, that has been brought under control from a Kremlin perspective. And from what available polling there is still broad public support for what is happening in Ukraine. They believe it is fair and just. However, Vladimir Putin, all signs are pointing to him mounting another wave of mobilizations. Thus far, he has mobilized those from some of the poorest, far-flung parts of Russia. He is now going to be turning to the middle classes as he tries to sustain his invasion. Once that happens, once you have more families wondering where their sons have got to, why they're not coming home, then that could well pose more difficult problems. But as of yet, I think if you look from Vladimir Putin down to a reasonable degree, there is no reverse gear in Russia's invasion. But what Ukraine is hoping is that once the story becomes bigger inside Russia, whether it's territory it loses or whether it's public opposition to the war, then the invasion over on foreign soil in Ukraine ends. But I think that is a hope at this stage. Mm-hmm.
And James, as I mentioned there at the beginning, and we have seen this in the past since this started in 2022, that during the winter, Russia attacks the infrastructure, particularly the energy infrastructure in Ukraine. They're doing that again this time round. How is Ukraine's energy network holding up in the face of those attacks?
It's holding up for now, but we've had a bit of a stark warning from one of the country's biggest energy companies, DTEC, where they're saying in a best case scenario, as a consequence of sustained strikes around this time of year, people may well go up to 12 hours a day without power. In a worst case scenario, they are saying it could be up to 20. And when we are talking about large parts of the country where temperatures plunge below zero regularly, parts of the country which are impoverished, that endure frontline fighting and have done for years, it does put lives at risk. The story of last time when Russia did this was one of Ukrainian survival, when they were able to bring the grids, power grids, back online relatively quickly. But of course, this just all adds to the strain Ukraine experiences with its air defences being stretched, with its troops fighting and its own population becoming under more strain. But I don't think you're going to see it accelerate an ending to this war.
And politically, we had those changes at cabinet level in Ukraine. It was said that President Zelensky was making sure that he was surrounded by loyalists. Has the new cabinet settled into the brief? Has there been any disharmony around those appointments?
Thus far, no. But you're right. You sort of, in the eyes of critics, we've seen President Zelensky replace loyal lieutenants with even more loyal up-and-comers. And what we're seeing is that, you know, we're seeing the usual updates from the Foreign Office saying they are, you know, engaging with foreign partners as per the norm. And I think the reason for that is that President Zelensky, his popularity is continuing to wane. And so this is part of him trying to sustain his position in the absence of general elections under martial law. But it's also him trying to refresh his approach with Western allies, because what he's asking for is not changing. But maybe if you have new lieutenants in there, a new foreign minister, a new head of infrastructure, for example, then it just might make his message refreshed enough so that Ukraine gets the support that it needs. But thus far, you know, there's a bit of a honeymoon period, but Ukrainians aren't shy of party politics, even in times of war. So let's see.
All right, James, thank you very much. James Waterhouse there, who's reporting for the BBC from Ukraine. Coming up next, some breaking news on the former DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.